Hello everyone, welcome to Journal Club with Happy. I'm your host, Happy Kasai, and I'm a graduate student at Vanderbilt University. This podcast is structured as a short scientific journal club where I will discuss scientific papers and relate their major findings. Generally, journal clubs have a scientific audience ranging from undergraduate science students to university professors, and the language used in journal clubs is very specific to the field of study. For this podcast, I try very hard to use everyday language to explain science. I'm also a science student, so in this journal club, we learn science together. Today's podcast is special because I am joined by my dear friend, Stedman Stevens. Stedman is also a graduate student at Vanderbilt University. I'm glad to have him as my first guest because he has been extremely supportive of this journal club.
Stedman, before we start, I want to say thank you for all the support you've given me.
And thank you for doing this episode with me.
Likewise, I'm very excited to take part in this endeavor and discussing this paper we have today.
Great. So over the past few episodes, we've covered some basic science papers on Alzheimer's disease, and today we follow on that same theme and look at another Alzheimer's paper. Today's paper was published 2 weeks ago on the Journal of Neuroinflammation. It comes from the labs of Dr. Christina Herford and Dr. Nicolas Bazier. The first author on this paper is Marilena Pox-Leitner, and it comes from the University of Tübingen in Germany. And the title of the paper is Western Diet Increases Brain Metabolism and Adaptive Immune Responses in a Mouse Model of Amyloidosis. It is a really large paper. It's a hefty paper. I have the printout here, and it is around 30 pages long with 11 figures. For the purpose of this journal club, we're going to divide it into two parts. The first part, which is today's part, is going to focus on the first half of the paper, which is the effect of diet on brain metabolism. And the second part was going to focus on the effect of diet on the immune response in the context of Alzheimer's disease. Before we get into the study design, I'll give a brief introduction to this paper. The primary focus of this paper is investigating diet-induced metabolic and inflammatory effects in the brain of an Alzheimer's disease model mouse. The model that they use is the APP-PS1 mouse. And the APP-PS1 stands for amyloid precursor protein presenilin-1. So this mouse expresses the mutant versions, the diseased versions of the human proteins amyloid precursor protein and presenilin-1. Both proteins are involved in the development of Alzheimer's disease through the accumulation of amyloid plaques. And what makes this paper interesting for me is that they introduce an environmental risk to an already existing genetic risk factor, which is the APP-PS1 mutations. The environmental risk here is the diet-induced obesity. And they create this diet-induced obesity by introducing the Western diet. They describe the Western diet as high in fats and sugars compared to the normal diet that laboratory mice are fed. And due to its high caloric content, this Western diet results in metabolic disorder like type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease, which we know to be as risk factors for neurodegeneration. And at the same time, the metabolism of this Western diet, which is high in sugar and fat, puts the mice through chronic low-grade inflammation, which is another risk factor for neurodegeneration. There's a hypothesis going on that the inflammatory process in the adipose tissue, which are the fat cells in the body, may lead to neuroinflammation in the brain. For today's part of the journal club, the major question that the research team asked is the effect of a high-fat, high-sugar diet on brain metabolism in the context of Alzheimer's disease. And brain metabolism is a very interesting topic because changes in the processes of energy production in the brain are associated with multiple diseases and disorders, including Alzheimer's. The brain primarily uses glucose as a source of energy. It doesn't mean that glucose is the only source of energy. It can also use fatty acids, but the preferred source of ATP, which is the energy for the brain, is glucose. However, a chronic oversupply of both glucose and fatty acids affects neurons negatively and leads to neurodegeneration. With that said, let's dive into today's paper. Stedman will walk us through the study design and some of the results.
Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into it. We're going to start out in figure number one. In figure number one, if you're just listening and you don't have the paper in front of you, figure one is composed of essentially two parts. The first part consists of an experimental setup that lays out the exact timeline of how this whole experiment was accomplished. And then in the second part, they look at the weight of different mice on two different diets, either the normal diet or the Western diet. And they look at weight gain over time. So in the first part, how this whole experiment was set up, it's essentially set up in two different parts. The first part is just the simple housing and development of the mice. The mice are fed a normal diet from birth until 2 months old, the mice from birth to 2 months old are fed a normal diet, that way not to implicate any type of developmental defects that could be caused by the diet. And so from 0 to 2 months, all the mice are fed the same diet. From 2 months to 8 months, the mice are either fed a normal diet or what Happy called a Western diet. At approximately 8 months of age, the mice undergo PET imaging or MRI imaging, and then after that, the mice are sacrificed and other experiments are accomplished, which we'll go over in the next part, things like histology, metabolomics, or flow cytometry. The second part of figure number one is essentially just the weight gain of the two different groups of mice, the normal diet or the Western diet. And what they show in this section of figure one is that the mice on the Western diet actually gain quite a bit more weight over the allotted time than the mice on the normal diet do. The mice on the normal diet gain approximately 5 grams from 2 to 8 months, whereas the mice on the Western diet gain approximately 12.5 to 15 grams. And then they go on to extrapolate that into male and female, and they show that you see the same weight gain effects in both male and female mice. Moving on to figure number two. Figure number two is a lipid analysis and metabolomics of the lipids in the liver. And in particular, they were interested in the liver because the liver is highly affected by a high calorie diet. And a high calorie diet often leads to systematic disruption and metabolic imbalances within the liver. And so it's likely that if you are eating a high, or if the mice are eating a high calorie diet, the first imbalances, or at least some of the first imbalances, are going to occur within the liver. And so they wanted to investigate the liver and what the lipid profile looked like within the liver. So to do so, they used a process called magnetic resonance spectroscopy. It's very comparable to something that most people have heard of today, which is an MRI. Essentially, what they do is they can go in and take pictures of the liver through this process, and they can establish what types of lipids are within the liver and approximately where those lipids are located. And there were a few things that they actually noted from this process. The first thing is that they observed a tenfold higher amount of total lipids when comparing the normal diet to the Western diet. And so that actually makes a lot of sense. If you're eating a diet high in lipids, it actually does make sense that you're going to have more lipids that congregate within the liver. They also noted that they saw no change in saturated lipid components or the fraction of the saturated lipids. However, they did detect lower levels of PUFAs, which are called polyunsaturated fatty acids, within the APPS1 Western diet group. And although they don't go into much detail here, it is good to note that one of the really interesting things about this is that PUFAs, as I'm going to call them, polyunsaturated fatty acids, have actually long been implicated in health. And the way that we get most, if not all, of the PUFAs that are incorporated into our cells and into our body is actually through the diet. And so although they don't investigate that specifically within this paper, I did want to bring that that point out and highlight it. Moving through the figure, when you get down to part C of figure number 2, they actually show images of the liver, and they have arrows pointing to two different sections comparing the normal diet and the Western diet. The yellow arrow, if you're following along, corresponds to subcutaneous fat. When comparing the normal to the Western diet, you see much higher amounts of subcutaneous fat. And if you're following along, the green arrow corresponds to abdominal fat. And so when, comparing the normal diet to the Western diet, they see much larger amounts of lipid deposition in all circumstances in that Western-style diet. And lastly, they did a metabolomics profile or a metabolite screen, if you will, on the blood plasma, and they noted a few things that they observed. The first thing that they noted they observed is a substantially higher amount of pyruvate change in the APPS1 Western diet animals. And they wanted to note that there was a small genotype effect or a small effect when comparing the wild type to the APPS1, but there was a much larger diet effect. And so it seems like the pyruvate concentration within the blood is slightly affected by the presence of APPS1, but it is definitely altered by the presence of a particular diet. Another thing they noted from the metabolomic screen is that all groups other than the wild type normal diet group developed significantly higher amounts of 3-hydroxybutyrate and isoleucine. And what's really quite interesting about that is that 3-hydroxybutyrate or 3-HBD has in previous studies been shown to be neuroprotective. And so they actually saw much higher amounts in the wild type and the normal diet. And so in a way that corroborates other studies, but it also adds a novel aspect to this, that diet also does seem to play a part in that 3-hydroxybutyrate presence or absence. And then lastly, the last thing that they note in this figure or in this section of the paper is that histidine is dramatically lower in the plasma of APP1 or APPS1 and the Western diet mice. Now Happy's going to continue with figures 3, 4, and 5 and go over a little bit more in detail about the brain imaging and glucose uptake.
Thank you, Simon. That was a beautiful description of figures 1 and 2. And in the following three figures, which are figures 3, 4, and 5, the research team looked at glucose metabolism, fatty acid metabolism, and neuroinflammation, respectively. The reason why I'm grouping these three figures together is because they used a similar technique for all three experiments. They used a technique called PET scanning, which is short for positron emission tomography. The way this technique works is that the research team injected the mice with radioactive analogs of glucose and long-chain fatty acids. And the uptake of these analogs was measured in a PET scanner. These radioactive analogs have very similar structures to normal glucose or fatty acids, but they release gamma rays as a form of radioactivity. And that can be detected and used to understand the metabolism of specific brain regions. And so in figure 3, the first thing that they looked at is glucose metabolism. The mice were injected with the radiotracer fludeoxyglucose, or FDG for short, and analyzed under a PET scan. The brains of the Alzheimer model mice that were on the Western diet showed higher uptake of this FDG tracer compared to all the other diet genotype conditions. This tells us that the combination of the Western diet with a genetic susceptibility to amyloidosis results in higher glucose metabolism in the whole brain. And the research team then dissected the data into different regions of the brain, primarily the cortex, the hippocampus, the cerebellum, and the hypothalamus. and they try to see if this brain if this glucose metabolism is different across these different brain regions. But what they found out is that there is no these results seem to corroborate the whole brain results that I just mentioned. Alzheimer model mice that are on the Western diet have higher glucose metabolism, have the highest glucose metabolism compared to the wild type mice and the Alzheimer model mice that are on the normal diet. In this figure, what's interesting to me is that the Alzheimer model mice that were on the normal diet had higher glucose uptake compared to the wild type mice that were on the Western diet. And by the way, here when I refer to the wild type mice, I'm referring to mice that did not have any genetic alterations to cause Alzheimer's disease. So they're genetically healthier mice compared to the APPPS1 mouse. And this interesting result that the Alzheimer model mice on the normal diet had higher glucose uptake compared to the wild type mice that were on the Western diet shows us that there's two things going on here. There's the genetic aspect and there's the diet aspect. Genetic affects glucose metabolism, as we can see that the Alzheimer model mice had higher glucose metabolism in their brains. And then diet also affects glucose metabolism, because the Western diet fed mice, regardless of their genotype, had higher glucose metabolism when compared to the normal diet mice. And if we were to rank the four conditions based on increasing glucose metabolism, we'll have the wild-type mouse fed normal diet as number one. Number two will be the Alzheimer model mice, which are on the normal diet. Number three will be the wild-type Western diet, the wild-type mouse, which is fed a Western diet. And the fourth would be the Alzheimer's model mice that were fed a Western diet. In figure four, they do a similar thing, but instead of looking at glucose metabolism, they look at fatty acid metabolism. What is different in figure four compared to figure three is the type of radio tracer that the research team injected into the mice. They injected the fatty acid analog fluoro-6-thiaheptadecanoic acid, or FTHA for short. And again, the mice get injected with the radio tracer, and their brain metabolism for fatty acids is analyzed under a PET scan. The radio tracer uptake was higher in the Western diet groups. So diet happens to be the most important factor when it comes to fatty acid metabolism in the brain. Regardless of the genotype, whether it be a wild-type mouse or the APPPS1 transgenic mouse, the diet that they were on, which is either the Western diet or the normal diet, seems to influence the metabolism of fatty acids in the brain. And the research team then further dissected the data to look at the four different brain regions, which are the cortex, the hippocampus, the cerebellum, and the hypothalamus. And what they observed was exactly the same thing with the whole brain scans. And diet, regardless of genotype, seems to affect fatty acid metabolism in the brain. And that was the major result from figure four. And in figure five, which is the last figure for today, the research team used a tracer for neuroglial reactivity, which is called the FGE-180. This tracer is a marker for neuroinflammation, especially the activation of glial cells in the brain. So here, if the diet of the mice is causing any neuroinflammation, then we'll see a higher uptake of this particular tracer. But the results of this PET experiment show that the genetics of the mice is more important than the diet when it comes to the tracer uptake, which is completely opposite to what they saw in figure four in relation to fatty acid metabolism in the brain. Regardless of which diet that the mice are on, the Alzheimer model mice had higher uptake of this neuroglial activation tracer, and which means that they have higher neuroinflammation compared to the wild type. And in terms of brain regions, they still looked at the cortex, the hippocampus, the cerebellum, and the hypothalamus. And we are more interested in the cortex and the hippocampus in this particular case, because those two regions happen to be the most affected with amyloid deposits in Alzheimer's disease. And if you look at in panel B, if you look at the particular bars for cortex and hippocampus, we can see that the diet effect is very little compared to the genotype effect. And the Alzheimer model mice, regardless of which diet they're on, will have higher neuroinflammation compared to the wild type mice. And that is it for today. This is the first part of this paper. Next week we'll cover the second part. As always, I'll add the PubMed link to the episode notes. I'll also add the link to the webpage of the primary investigators so that you can check out more of their work. And again, Stedman, thank you for doing this journal club with me.
Thank you for having me, Happy. I'm really excited to dive into the second part of this and look at the specific immunological implications of both diet as well as genetic risk factors on Alzheimer's.
Thank you, and until next week, ciao.